some news just came down about Shohei Ohtani, and I just wish the Angels would realize the error of their ways. But overall, I feel like on Monday, I felt like this, the show today, I felt like I was coming off of a bender. Like, I couldn't focus.
Right.
You know, I was, like, down, distracted. It was ridiculous. I thought this weekend was fantastic.
By the way, you want to actually mention the Ohtani news and why you're disappointed?
Yeah, so Shohei Ohtani left his last start with a little discomfort. Has been ruled with a grade 1 to 2 strain of the flexor pronator mass. He should be able to throw again in 4 to 6 weeks. It doesn't matter because they're not going to make the postseason. And he's not a pitcher. He shouldn't be a pitcher. He's got a skill set that allows him to be a pitcher, right? But he shouldn't be. He should be an everyday player. I think his bat has suffered because they're trying to make him this two-way player. And it's a cool trick. And at first, it seemed like something that would happen. But it's not. And even if he becomes a two-way player, he's at most, I think, like a high, maybe a high-end number two. But for sure, he's not an ace. And I just think that his bat can be something special. And they're, I think, ruining what they have in him. And it's clearly not working out for multiple injuries now via pitching. So I think they need to get their head out of the sand, but I don't think they're going to.
I agree. It's ridiculous. They need to let the arm heal and deal with a full season when there is a full season and let him just bop at the plate for the rest of this shortened season, however long it goes for. John Von Tobel's with us from VSiN. You can hear his show every day at 10 a.m. You are a massive NBA dude. How do we read what happened over the weekend? Was there a conclusion when it comes to NBA scoring?
Was that a fat joke? Because I really didn't appreciate that. I've been working on this. Aaron Renning, who's a really good basketball handicapper, we have been texting over the weekend, and then he sent this over this morning, and it's a great rundown of some of the changes here in scoring for the NBA. And Adam's going to love this. But if you look at this overall for the NBA, right, we had the first two games go under. They had Friday, all six games go over the total. Since then, the overs have a slight edge up to this point. In an Orlando bubble, we thought maybe that unders would have the advantage. But you put these numbers together, it's ridiculous. So the bubble average scoring points per game, 235.5. Regular season is 222.9. But if you look across the board, everything is essentially the same. Three-point shooting in the bubble is 35.6 per game, 35.7 in the regular season. 46.5% is the field goal percentage for teams in the bubble, 46% versus non-bubble or regular season games. Here's the big difference, though. Fouls per game, 52 in the bubble versus 41.2 in the regular season. And free throws made per game, 46.8 in the bubble versus 35.6 in regular season contests. So he had the theory, which I think is brilliant and makes sense, and I'm sure Adam would agree with it, is that, look, all of this fake crowd noise that we're hearing as viewers of this, they're not. They're playing in silent arenas. You know, referees not only are, I would think, maybe being swayed by teammates of the players on the floor and coaches, but contact, slaps, things like that, they're hearing that more. It's going to be more audible. They're going to be more in tune with what's going on in the court just from that standpoint, and so fouls are up. So I don't even know if it's as much as acquiescing to the teams and the benches, as much as they're hearing and seeing a little bit more because of the environment they're in.
And they also don't have to worry about getting booed if they make too many foul calls.
I mean, it's also a very good point. The other day, I mean, there's been multiple terrible calls, obviously, and that's just basketball officiating in general. But you're absolutely right. I mean, they can. There's not the sense of getting mad or trying. Well, actually, now that I'm talking, and I'm talking myself through this thought, Adam, wouldn't you think, though, that, like, a lot of the times we see with – we make fun of refs all the time. They love to go against the grain, right? Like, they love those momentum-shifting plays. They love to dance out the half court on the block charge when it's going – momentum's going completely the other way. Like, don't you think that's part of it, too? Like, the crowd, to a certain extent, they're not getting booed, but I thought they would cut down just because, like, they're not going to get caught up in the emotion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know. Will they – Have you seen a big adjustment on the totals yet, or are books going to be a little bit slow to adjust to all these fouls being called?
Oh, I think they adjusted, man. Like you saw, like the other day, like where you're seeing totals regularly now in a couple of the games, like near 240, high 230s. I think they definitely adjusted. They saw the market that was betting them. I think Friday obviously was a big adjustment as well. But you know, you look today, Memphis New Orleans total was 236.5. You see Dallas Sacramento tomorrow's 237, 230.5 for Suns Clippers tomorrow as well, 244 for Houston and Portland. So I think they're adjusting for quite a few of these, especially these offensive teams with bad defenses.
What have we seen out of the Pelicans? It seems like maybe a bit overvalued.
Well, this has been a thought. I wrote about this a couple times for VSiN in our magazine, and it's been a point of contention for me that I think people need to realize. you know, through the first two seeding games, they've been relatively disappointing. Their offense has actually been much worse than their defense. Their defense hasn't been bad, but their offense has been atrocious through these first two games. But it's funny because the betting public, and I think I brought this up to you guys before, like they can't get enough of the Pelicans. And yet, after these first two seeding games, since they've had Zion back, they're 11-11 straight up and 10-12 against the spread, despite the fact that they're getting bet like every single time, save for the Clippers game, right? The Clippers game, and the Clippers game actually held steady at 5. Like, it didn't even really move that much. But for the most part, the Pelicans have been a very, like, public team at the windows, and it's never been, like, it hasn't been returning to the public's pockets. And what I find even more interesting is usually the public will, like, latch on the teams that treat them well. Then you have the Oklahoma City Thunder, who just keep winning and covering games, like, left and right. And since Thanksgiving, they're covering at a 62% clip against the spread. And yet, for some reason, numbers keep moving against them. And granted, they lose today to the Denver Nuggets. But we're talking about, like, even the game against the Jazz where they thumped them. You know, that opened Oklahoma City 1, got there, excuse me, 1.5, got to Utah minus 1 at one point, and then closed back at pick or Utah minus 1 in some shots. And I'm just amazed that we have these two teams that are next to one another. The Thunder, who are completely flying under the radar, continue to cover and win. And then you have the New Orleans Pelicans, who aren't even winning, by the way. It's not even that they're just not covering. They're not even winning. They have a losing record since Zion's come, and yet the public can't stop betting them.
Will they stop betting them? They've got to at some point.
I don't think – I mean, today, they bet them again today. they bet them up 2 points against the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, in this matchup, they have really schooled the Grizzlies in two regular season affairs. They've blitzed them from beyond the arc. They've shot in the first two regular season meetings. They were over 43% from three. And they're doing a pretty good job today against them, up by 7 at the break. But they bet them again today. So, like, I'm not sure if they're ever going to get off of them, man. It's really weird.
Who has been the least efficient offense in the bubble?
Ooh, this is a good one. So this is a setup for I asked somebody this because I thought I sounded smart. Do you have a guess? Can you guess?
No.
It's the Los Angeles Lakers.
The
Lakers have the worst offense.
Huh? That was going to be my guess. I suck.
The Los Angeles Lakers have the worst offensive efficiency in the bubble, just behind the Utah Jazz. They're averaging well under a point per possession on offense. Now, they have, of course, taken on two of the best defenses in the NBA, the Los Angeles Clippers and the Toronto Raptors in their first two games. But I bet them tonight, I laid 6 with them against the Utah Jazz, because from a couple of matchup standpoints, they match up really well with the Utah Jazz. I laid 6, it's sitting at 6, like it hasn't gone past 6.5. It's gone to 6.5 and then come back down whenever it hits it. But when you look at this overall, Utah has actually been pretty poor defensively in the bubble. The New Orleans game that they ended up winning, the Pelicans actually had a really bad offensive showing, despite the fact that they had that big lead. But you go to that second game against the Thunder. Thunder's offensive rating was 117. Like, they were just schooling them from that standpoint. And in the two games, they've given up well over a point and a half per possession in transition. They're the dead last team in the NBA this season overall in defending against teams in the fast break. And what's interesting about that is the Lakers are one of the best transition teams in the NBA, and they've had to take on these two really good defensive teams in the first two contests. And now it's going to be so much easier for them when they're taking on the team without Bojan Bogdanović, one of their better perimeter defenders, a team that they can run up and down the floor on. You know, with Rudy Gobert off the floor, the Jazz have a negative 4.5 net rating, but with Rudy Gobert on the floor, they're giving up almost a point and a half per possession in transition. So it's like, you know, pick your poison. It's just a terrible matchup in my mind for Utah. But I think it's a really big outbreak for the Lakers today. They have the worst offensive rating through two games, but I think tonight's going to be a big one for them.
Have you noticed, I know you've been watching a lot of games in the bubble, have you noticed any teams that just don't seem to want to be there?
Yes. Actually, you know what? That's actually, so I don't know if you guys saw this come down today. There was one team that is literally, I would essentially say, announced today that they don't want to be there anymore. That would be the Brooklyn Nets. So I don't know if you guys watched like their slobber knocker against the Washington Wizards on Sunday. I watched every minute of it. It was fascinating. But the Nets, they ended up winning that game by 8. Today they announced that Jared Allen and two other players, Caris LeVert and their three-point shooter, who I can't remember, who I believe went to Virginia.
Harris?
Yeah, there we go. So all three of them, done. They're not playing this game against Milwaukee coming up. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, are we fighting for a playoff spot or what? You're already down 5 key rotation guys, and then your only 3 guys who have been with you throughout the regular season, they're like, ah, yeah, we're going to sit this one against the Milwaukee Bucks. So I think, look, despite the fact that they won against Washington, the announcement today that you're sitting 3 key guys tells me enough that Brooklyn just wants to get the hell out of there.
John Von Tobel with us here on the show. You can hear him on VSiN. And what other spots can we find your stuff, John?
Oh, you know, let me plug that. HardwoodHandicappers.com. Dude, I hear that it's doing very well. It's doing absolutely phenomenal.
I didn't want to say it myself. I want to give you a chance if you wanted to. So, yeah, there you go.
So Humans actually gave me the idea because everything that you see up on that site, those are my notes for the show, for the NBA games. And, you know, I do this thing where I typically over prep for stuff. And so Humans gave me the idea, like, why don't you just put that all up on a website or on Twitter or something? And so I started to put up screenshots of it, and people liked it so much that I decided, why not track the interaction here? So I made a little WordPress blog, and I own the domain. And, yeah, so Harvard Handicappers. We also have a podcast as well that's backed by corporate at VSiN. So those episodes come out every Wednesday.
John, doesn't seem like a whole lot of goals are being scored in the NHL, although it is 3-1 Dallas right now in the second period. Yeah. It's 3 goals from the Stars over VGK. So not a lot of goals being scored in the bubble, though.
No, and I was actually curious. I was going to ask, you know, I was going to ask you, Adam, because I know you follow hockey a little bit more. Like, you know, I kind of alluded to, we were talking about the NBA, right? There was this thought that maybe the games are going to be a little bit lower scoring in the bubble, and we saw the totals when they were first announced, right, and first posted, that they were a lot lower than the regular season closing averages. And I was wondering, like, was that a conversation in, like, the world of hockey when it came to this? Because, like, we're talking now, again, like you mentioned it, but after the Lightning Capital game, we're talking about, what, 2-12 to the unders of these games up to this point. Like, that's an insanely, insanely big clip to keep going under the total. And I wonder if that was part of the conversation going into the bubble or what, because I'm not as familiar with the intricacies of hockey, how a neutral would affect scoring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I thought there was talk that there would be some choppy offensive play from guys that really haven't had contact in a long time and haven't, you know, been on the ice with their team a whole lot the last few months. It's, you know, 4 months off. It's going to be tough to kind of connect on some of the offensive mentality there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're seeing a little sloppy play. Like you mentioned, this game, the Knights game. I mean, one of the goals, you give up the goal, and then immediately in like 30 seconds, you turn it over on your own end, and then you give up another good look, in which Leonard gets, you know, a little screwed with traffic in front of him, and he gives up a goal. And now all of a sudden, I was on with you, and I turn around, it's 3-1. So sloppy play has been big for the Knights up to this point, but it hasn't necessarily equated to a lot of goals. But I'll say this, too. Like, one game that comes to mind, Montreal and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was 1-for-7 on the power play. Like, they had a lot of opportunities, and they outshot Montreal like a big clip, but they ultimately couldn't do it. So maybe that's right. Maybe it is a sloppy play. I just found it interesting that the conversation around the NBA was unders, 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 and it's actually kind of over to more to the overs, and now we're looking at this bubble or the two hub cities, and it's under city.